Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is called The Phoenix. The Phoenix is an aspiring filmmaker who uses blackjack to make money. Phoenix, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks for having me, guys. Huge fan of your guys' podcast. You guys are so wildly informative. Glad to be here.
Thank you. That sounds oddly familiar, using blackjack to further your filmmaking career. But yeah, all right. Well, let's move forward.
All right. We have an email question from a listener who sent it to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Since it's about blackjack, today seemed to be a good time to deal with it and let our guest have first crack at it. It seems the listener has seen various blackjack strategy counts and wants to know where to find the most accurate ones. He's also seen the speed count in Beat Blackjack Now by Frank Scolbetti. He wants to know if you think this is a decent count.
All right, so here's my thoughts. And when I'm saying negative things, I try to give political answers to not...
You don't have to be politically correct. You can trash Scolbetti if you want.
Okay. Okay. So here's what I've... So I'll answer the latter part of the question first, which is the speed count a good count? And basically what I've heard is it's just don't do it. That's what I've heard. But I haven't, seen it and tested it for myself. For me, in my personal experience, I've only used high-low, but I've heard from other professionals in terms of accuracy, and maybe you will know more than I will on this topic, Richard, but I've heard, I think it's KO is most accurate, at least I guess, especially if you're going for insurance. Again, I haven't used KO, but that's just what I heard from the person, from the fellow blackjack expert that I was conversing with.
So, I've said often on the show that it doesn't really matter which count you learn. I wouldn't go with the speed count. KO is fine. High-low is fine. I've used the high-low for 30-plus years. Things like the speed count, people want to take shortcuts. They don't want to put in the work. And I would say, if you want to do this, put in the work. And if not, then there's nothing wrong with just learning basic strategy and going after the comps. You'll have good vacations. You'll lose less money. And if you don't want to put in the time and effort to actually learn how to... make money, well, there's nothing wrong with that. You probably have a life. So that's what I would say. I would say pick up Knockout Blackjack or Black Belt in Blackjack, one of those books, and learn either the KO or the high-low, and you'll be fine.
All right, we get another email. This is a listener much more advanced than the first one. This guy plays high-low essentially perfectly, but it takes him 50 seconds to accurately count down a single deck. He's heard that he needs to do much faster than that to play at the professional level. He wants to know how to increase his speed, or is it really that important?
All right. Not to toot my own horn here, but I feel like I'm a great person to answer this question because I think it was... Maybe you can correct me this, but I feel like I've heard that the MIT team felt like you had to count a single deck in 30 seconds. And when I was on a team, that was the standard. You need to be able to count a single deck in 30 seconds. And what you would do is you would set aside two cards and you would know what was there, basically. And so you needed to have 30 seconds of speed plus accuracy 5 times in a row. And once if that drill was done, you were good to go into a casino. And then there was even additional super nerds on the team that felt that it should be at 24 seconds. I feel like if you can do it in 30 seconds, you're good.
Okay, so I don't believe the emailer. He says he plays the high-low perfectly. Does that mean on the kitchen table, or does that mean going as slow as you want? I don't believe that someone who can play the high-low perfectly in a casino takes that long to count down a single deck. Now, there is some technique involved in counting down a single deck. If you're turning the cards over one at a time, it's going to take a lot longer. But if you just fan through the cards, if you turn the deck face up and just fan through them, you can go a lot faster. So, if he means that he can play the high-low perfectly dealing to himself on the kitchen table, he's probably too slow, and there's no way that you can know if you're fast enough unless you get into a casino and actually try to do it in a casino. Or you could have somebody deal to you at home, but I've found that no matter how much you do that, you end up stopping in the middle and talking about things and whatever. So, the skill of counting a single deck fast is not important at all. It really is worth nothing.
As long as you're fast enough to keep up.
As long as you're fast enough to do it in a casino, yeah. So it's a totally separate skill. So, I don't know. To me, there's something wrong with the story. But I would say go out to the casino, get to the lowest minimum table you can, and see how you can do actually in a casino setting. And if you can keep up and do it accurately, you would need somebody with you also counting to see if you're accurate. If you can do that, then it doesn't matter how long it takes you to count a single deck.
Yeah. Okay. I concur with... I am not worthy. I concur with your statements, Richard. And then also, basically what that means is if you're in a casino, basically you go to the tables that have the dealers at the speed that you know that you can keep up with. You know what I mean? And because there were, in my initial phases, there was some dealers I couldn't keep up with. And I remember when I finally got better, I was like, it's time for the rematch. So I went to that dealer and I was able to keep up. And I'm like, yes. And then additionally, I'll say this. I additionally came through the Blackjack Apprenticeship training. And then I did not listen to Colin as well as I should have. Because sort of my story is I went to one boot camp. Realized I got lucky, went to a second boot camp and straightened up my game. And then after that second boot camp, then I went on to a team. So between my second, the first and second boot, or actually through all the Blackjack Apprentice, he even said in one of the training things that I was, you know, when I was getting trained, when counting cards on a table, I used to count the individual cards as they came out. If it's like six deck. So like the first set of cards that would come out, and then I would count the ones that would get laid on top of it, and that's just how I did it. Even though in the training camp, he's like, no, wait till they come out as pairs and then count them.
Right.
And then after that, count the singles as people get double downs or need to build hands, whatever. And like, so when I went to the team and I was like going one at a time through the deck, doing that drill, they were like, whoa. They were almost aghast at that. Because they're like, whoa, you're not doing two at a time? So this is also an answer.
So when you used to practice, you would turn cards over one at a time.
One at a time. For my initial, I'd say like half a year doing it. And then basically when I had to switch to two at a time, it was really hard at first. But the huge payoff, and I'm a canceller, do two at a time now. It is way less mental fatigue.
Hmm.
Like, you do not fry your brain
as much. Yeah, you're counting half as much.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It's just...
So, when you went through the boot camp, did they have a time that they wanted you to be able to count down a single deck?
No. They talked about it. It's more just like, play at table. Here's how it is. How are you responding to everything?
More like real-world conditions. Than,
yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really valuable. Because like, people talk, but... Reality starts to set in when you as like a professional are sitting across from someone and then you just see like a major basic strategy error or whatever. Then it's like, whoa, we need to hone in on this. And then for me, I always try to cater to whoever I'm training, and then like, hey, this might be helpful for you. This might be helpful for you. This might be helpful for you, just to try to customize information for the needs of whoever we're training.
You are called the Phoenix. I assume this is not because you're an Arizona Diamondback fan. How did you come up with that name?
That is correct, Bob. Yeah, that name, believe it or not, I'm kind of, I don't know how you guys feel, but I'm fat now. But I used to be a cross-country runner in high school. And so after high school, and I sweat profusely. So as a means of trying to keep my basically slender figure, I would go running after my high school days, you know, just to try. That was my means of exercise. And one day I went running with my comic book buddy, and I sweat profusely, so I took my shirt off. And then he's like, "Whoa, dude, you have like a phoenix in your chest. Phoenix, it's in your chest hair. Look at that, bro." And I was like, he's a comic book nerd. So I was like, whatever, dude. I was like, you know, people see what they want to see type thing. But it wasn't until later when I went on like a church trip with a bunch of like married dudes, went up to take a piss in the middle of the night, and all of them were like, "Whoa, dude," like totally like someone that wouldn't think that, like saw the phoenix. And the general reaction was to stare in almost like a hypnotic status.
I have to say, I actually saw a photograph of you with your shirt off, and I saw the phoenix, and I was like, "Now, did you darken that or something? That is
not Photoshop.
That is natural. That is natural. That way.
Yes.
Wow, yeah. That's
that could you could do children's parties.
Yeah.
Mommy, why is that guy taking off his shirt?
Yeah.
What is this phoenix he talks about?
Sounds like a good way to get arrested.
I don't know. We on this show we have had Brian Zembeck, who has the $100,000 breast. Are we getting into a rut, Richard?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. How did you get started in the AP game, and how long have you been doing it?
Yeah, I think it's 2012. And so, yeah, like I got started through Blackjack Apprenticeship. In fact, I'll even back up before that. So I was in Oregon, and I was like a motion graphics guy. In 2008, housing crash happened. And I was like, I progressively prior to that, I had continued, you know, I went to school and I was using my motion graphics and visual effects skill set. And I was like, okay. And I continually made more money as a freelancer through all those years. And then the 2008 housing market crash happened. And I was like, man, I'm not going to stay up here in Podunk, Oregon, where I can't like follow my dream. I want to be a filmmaker. I was like, I can't stay up here. I was like, if I'm going to like lose money, I'm going to go follow my dreams in LA, losing my money. And so I just did this abrupt transition. My mom helped me out with some finances with that. And I was still under the burden of my college loan. And when I was transitioning, there was this guy that I'd go to church with and we'd make church videos with. And he's like, "Hey, let me introduce you to this dude." And conveniently, it happened to be the church team, one of the leaders of the church team.
That's Colin and Ben.
Yeah, it was Ben. And he was up in Oregon at the time. And like, I was like, okay. I specifically remember the guy. He was part of their team. Him kind of like, "Hey, I got this guy I want you to meet." And then it was Ben. And then I remember at the hipster bar in Portland that we were hanging out at while I was transitioning to LA. I was, you know, done working, just like looking for the move. And I was asking like, "Hey, do you know anybody?" And they put me in touch with the guy that was making their documentary. Also, I specifically remember
the documentary about the church team.
The Holy Rollers.
The Holy Rollers.
Mm-hmm.
They put me in touch with that guy, Brian, who's now like a documentary director. And he also went on to do like another documentary called Fight Church, which is like...
first rule of Fight Church, right? You don't talk to God. You go through me.
Well, it was more like turn the other cheek, but yet we're fighting. You know what I mean? Like they cover that topic really well. So basic, because it's kind of like spirituality and gambling, spirituality and MMA fighting. So he likes those like gray area topics, like really push the envelope. And he's done like, so both those documentaries are great. Because I, you know, I'm a believer. And like, but at the same time, like there's some people have some opinions and not everybody sees eye to eye.
Right.
About those things. Clearly, I'm okay with, you know, hitting the casinos, hitting the table, and I'm also a huge fan of MMA, but I don't want to get sidetracked. So when I was transitioning to LA, I think the guy that I went to church with was trying to see if I could be like one of their players, because like, guy out of work, moving to LA. And then I think he was like, "No." Ben was like, "Nope." I think I remember that exchange. It's blurry in my mind because at that time I was just like, "Let's go to LA and make movies." So I went down there and I met the documentary filmmaker, But I didn't know that that was the documentary that he was making at the time. But we just talked about movies and stuff, and there's a little bit of me, I specifically like fictional narrative. And I was like, dude, man, there's so many documentary filmmakers up in Portland. I was like, who cares? So, and I'm not a fan of documentaries, but I remember I was in LA, got a motion graphics job, you know, down there, and we took a trip to Vegas, and that was my first trip to Vegas. Took a trip, $200 budget, blew it, lost it, and then it was when we came back from that trip that the trailer for the documentary came out, and I was like, huh. And then the job that I had doing motion graphics, I lost that job, and then I watched the documentary. The documentary had come out by that time, and then at the end of the documentary, he talked about boot camps, and I sat on the couch playing Magic the Gathering for a month because I had a severance pay from the motion graphics job, and then I was like, and then I thought about it, because Magic the Gathering is basically a card game where it's like my 5/6 creature is going to beat your 4/3 creature.
No, we've had Magic champions that became card counters on the show before.
So. Oh well,
like John Finkel and yeah,
my brethren. Yeah. Because basically, like, I was like, well, if it's a number card game, like, and then a documentary, and then boot camp, I was like, oh, let me look into that. I looked into that, and then I went to a boot camp, and then, you know, the rest is history. I've been doing it, and I think that was 2012 that I went to that first boot camp, and then I'm doing it up till now. Now, I'm in LA, and now I'm trying to, ideally, I would like to get paid as a filmmaker. You know, and Blackjack has funded my dreams, but, I'll put it this way. If I run out of money trying to make movies, Blackjack is my safety net.
That's story of my life. There you go. Yeah.
When you're on the road playing Blackjack, do you stay in the same hotel that you play in? If not, how do you choose which hotel to stay at?
I'm one of those guys that tries to go for the cheap seats, real shrewd. You know, businessman tries to keep it cheap, and like it's basically Motel 6, and then I got a Windam Rewards credit card, which all over the nation it's like Super 8, Travelodge, and Days Inn. There's even a Days Inn over here that's a casino. But like in general, I don't, wherever I'm staying, I don't play. Just generally, in fact, now it's just like hotel rooms. So those are totally like separate from casinos. And then, if you can do it, there's another option. I tried once Airbnb, and that was really successful. If you could find like a really cheap option for it,
I love Airbnb. I mean, I've been staying there the last number of trips I've made. I always stay Airbnb rather than a hotel nowadays. I find it much cheaper, and if I'm traveling with my family, you know, I just went to Tucson. I got a 3-bedroom house for like $90 a night. You know, so, yeah, I love Airbnb. So, so now, I mean, currently, you mentioned before you were playing on a team, but now currently are you playing solo?
Yeah. In fact, sort of the timeline, it was like solo player for, I think, 2 years. And then it was 7 months on a team. And then it was like I paired with another guy. But I've been, oh, yeah.
Why did you leave the team? I got kicked off. You got kicked off?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I really butted heads with the team leader.
Running off your mouth.
Yeah, just not seeing eye to eye and just being kind of a, you know, just being rowdy and just
disrespectful.
Was it about disagreements about how to approach the game, or was it just a personality conflict when you're not playing?
I think a little bit of both. But just to, again, kind of like be a little political here. It was a combination of, I think part of what informed my behavior was being dissatisfied with financially how I was doing. Because basically it's like you would be a weekend, it was kind of like you were a weekend team where you'd play on the weekend. It's like if you're a married couple, you'd play. And so for 7 months, I made basically $1,000 a month. And I was dissatisfied with that ROI, but those dudes are totally smart. Those guys are wildly intelligent. It's just, there's kind of like fights, intelligence fights.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I think fighting over, disagreements, cause some stuff is like opinions.
Yeah. And fighting is facts.
And some stuff it's really hard to quantify. Like, oh, I know why we got backed off. It's like, oh, okay. You talked to the pit boss in retrospect and he told you the exact truth why we got backed off. or you know, or you think you know why we got backed off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and stuff like that would be talked about and fought about. But those guys, so like, it may sound like I'm kind of like jabbing them, and like my sentiment towards that time period is negative. And I was dissatisfied with how much I made, but those guys, my sentiment towards, to speak a positive thing of that 7 month time period, is I learned a lot. It was a wild eye opening because I not beyond blackjack, it's like I learned about video poker, even trained with your software, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, learn about hole carding and other things too, cutting, ace sequencing. It was great. Just huge, huge eye opener. Really, really.
So how do you like being on your own? Do you like that lifestyle?
Well, conveniently, financially, it's paid off like way better. And it's also, you're not fighting. It all just worked out. And I'll say this, there's a little bit of luck in there. There was luck in my early phase. Like, I should have lost money and I didn't. And then, you know, played a little bit, joined a team. Then the guy that I paired with after I left the team was a guy that also left the team prior to me, alias JC Note. He happened to have a bunch of capital, and by that time I'd built up like 25. I took out $5,000 initially at the very, very beginning, built that to $25,000 after the team. And then I was doing motion graphics in LA, and I was like, dude, you either need to pay me more. They're paying me $400 a day. I was like, you either need to pay me more or I'm leaving. And then they paid me more. So they paid me $500.
Yeah, sounds terrible.
Well, here's the deal. It was tough. Like they started to pay me $500 a day instead of $400 a day. But
that's a substantial raise.
It is. And then I continued, and my motion graphics and effects got better. But I was like, dude, I want to tell these stories, and the only way I'm going to be able to do it is if I'm able to give my whole focus to it, which is sort of the phase I'm at right now. And then a year later, I was like, my effects got so much better, and I'm so proud of that. And my thought is like, now I know if I put my attention to filmmaking, my filmmaking will get better. And so I was like, okay, hey, guys, I gotta go. Like I have to. So it was a year of me sticking with them and then paying me more. And then I was like, look, I'm gonna go full time. I went full time, paired with JC Note. I had $25,000. He had $35,000. So we had 60, and then the first bank in 6 weeks, we doubled it.
So now, okay, so let's talk about that. So you put together a 60,000 bankroll.
Yeah.
And what was your target?
To double it? Yeah, to double it. But here's the deal.
Yeah.
Just this is also something gathered from the team and like super duper intelligent dudes. We had a thing of two of three targets. You know how like speed, price, quality, pick any two?
Yeah.
The three targets are AV goal, EV goal, and time goal, hours goal.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And so if you hit two of the three, you're good.
And you break it.
Yeah. Then we were free to break
it. And how were you going to break it?
So this is also yielded from the super wildly intelligent team.
Okay. Because I have to say, over the years, it's really, I mean, with a two-man team, it's a little different.
Yeah.
But it can be really complicated trying to figure out how to compensate people when you break a bankroll. So I'm curious how you guys decided to do it.
And here's the deal. I've done it a multiple bunch of ways, and this is the formula that I feel is very fair. I feel really solid in, and it's kind of like I want to go with this unless I see something better. So here's the formula is 50% of money of the 60K that we made, 50% of that goes to what I call the investment side.
The investors, sure.
So yep. It's percentage of investment. So 30K gets divided by how much you invested.
Right.
The other side, I call it the labor side, work side, performance side.
Yep.
But it's basically how many hours you worked, that 30K gets divided by the percentage. And it's based on how much EV you generated. Because one dude can be playing a $10 an hour game, and another dude can be playing a $20 an hour game. Oh, yeah, and that's another thing that we took away from the team is tracking EV and AV. And you get paid on EV.
Wait, EV and AV? What's AV?
Actual value, like what you actually make.
Oh, you mean what you actually won?
Yeah, because here's the deal. That first bank, we AV got 60K. It was a little, it's some weird, $60,234, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But 60K. And then the EV was like 30K.
Right. So okay. We hit, so you like got a, lucky.
Yeah. Positive variance surge.
Okay.
And then from there, man, I've never looked back. And that was full time. We got so lucky.
Okay. But oh, but wait. So I want to go back. So I'm guessing that you play all different kind of games, right? You play count games, some video poker, some hole cards, right? Various different things. Or are you pretty much just straight card counting?
Yeah. For me, I'm a card counter.
Okay. And is JC Note also just counting? Or what I'm getting at is, who decides what your EV is, and how do you determine what your hourly EV is?
It was that first bank, it was mainly card counting, mm-hmm. You know? And so it was, in fact, I think it was all card counting. So that, it was just based off of the EV that we calculated for CVCX. You know what I mean? Like, just whatever the EV is in CVCX that we calculated per game that we put in the spreadsheet would...
But would you keep track of, this was the cut, this was the number of players at the table I was with?
Yeah.
Would you just say, it's a $500 max table, so it's going to be X number per hour?
So it's not players at the table. But we did do average cut, because different dealers would come up and cut differently. And we were, like, conveniently at the time, I was staying at his place to cut down on expenses. And then every morning we could kind of talk, be like, hey, this kind of happened. Because there was one place that seemed like the dealers dealt slower. And I was like, hey, dude, I just want you to know, like, don't know if this EV is, like,
right,
super
right.
accurate here. Is it cool? And he was like, yeah, it's totally. I think part of what made it cool is, like, we were bringing in the money. It was like 10K a week.
Yeah.
And that made everything cool. It's like we were just like watching our
you know. Now, do you still play together?
You know, I loved him so much. I don't play. He went on to join another team. I just want to kind of keep that a little secret. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah, nobody will hear this.
So. Yeah. Yeah. But when he was on the team, it was great. He coddled. I had him on for, I think five banks, but I was the workhorse. So that 60K, he invested 35K, but made 25K off of that 60K based off the two parameters that we're talking about.
Right.
And then I had worked so much, but invested less that I made 35K but had invested 25. So then we were like equal financial portions. So the next one we were like, okay, let's do bank two, 40-40, and let's go. And like I played more than he did. And yeah.
So okay, so then you split up with him, and now when did you start where you're just solo now on your own?
So here's what I would do is I would just keep him on as an investor. So he'd just get a piece of the investment,
sure.
But he was zero player. And I did that, I think, for two or three banks. And then eventually got to where like my bankroll's like 100K. And he called me up and he's like, hey, dude, you don't need my money. And like, he's absolutely right. You know, because like a bank will break and you'd be like, man, that could be mine. And he's like, dude, hey, you know, I've made enough money off you. And like, and he's like, look, I would give you the same advice even if I wasn't on your bank. But it was cool, like, because he would have a spreadsheet that he'd just like get up in the morning and I'd be like, wow, I wonder how my investment's doing, and then like go and check it, and it's like, it's awesome because it's like, whoa, that's way better than any stock or any other type of investment, because this is so active and awesome.
Sure.
You know, and then he'd send me a text and we'd be like, yeah, we're awesome. And you know, it's fun to have that camaraderie. But yeah, I'd say I think it was like a year having him on, and then basically these are rough numbers, like 6 or 8 months of just me just being flat solo, you know,
6 or 8 months ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Started. Yeah. Just like, it's like,
so
okay.
How much time do you spend on the road? Like what's your normal schedule? Like?
Full time. And I get about 25 hours a week on average, or yeah. I mean, give or take, some weeks are nasty.
And where's your home base, LA right now?
Yes.
And so, do you drive all of it? Do you fly to the East Coast?
Yeah, I'm a big road warrior. The road warrior is the model that I really appreciate. But I think yielded from the wealth of intelligence that comes from your guys' podcasts, perhaps I may fly out and rent a car from Costco.
Auto Slash is the one I recommend.
Okay, gotcha. Which that needs to happen to cut down on expenses. But I'm a big advocate of just like, you know, drive there and then beat them up. But there's going to kind of come a point where it's like, you got to fly overseas. Like if you want to, but here's the deal. I don't want to do blackjack for forever. And it's been great so far. Hopefully, like, you know, cross my fingers, I make like a Phoenix web series or something. And people love it. And like I'm paid to make that art. And I can just like tip the hat to you guys in blackjack. You know, and Blackjack Apprenticeship and all the dudes that helped me along the way to be able to make my dreams. But I have that as a safety net now. And like, yeah, it's like Road Warrior. I may entertain the idea of flying places.
So, so currently I still don't have an idea of
gotcha.
Like where have you been going? Like what kind of, do you, how far
all
have
over
you
US.
Driven?
Yeah, I really combed the West Coast. And on through to, but you know, it's weird. So
up to Washington, Oregon.
Yeah. Washington, Oregon, Nevada, California, New Mexico, Arizona. And then there's like this huge chasm. And then you get to all these East Coast casinos. Cause I don't know if you've seen a map of America, like Montana, Idaho, like.
Well, in the north, but in the south, they're all there.
Well, yeah. Right? But you still have to cross over to, cause like, isn't there, I just like, when you look at the map, like, I haven't gone over what I call the chasm.
Well, I don't know about this chasm. It seems to me there's a pretty clear, you know, I mean, like, from New Mexico,
Arizona,
I don't know.
New Mexico, Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, yeah.
But isn't Oklahoma, it's like they have those aunties.
Oh, don't let that fool you.
Okay, unless
yeah, there's a bajillion casinos in Oklahoma, so
I know, that's like number two after Nevada.
Yeah. And then you can get down into Louisiana, Mississippi. I mean,
yeah.
There's a whole road that goes all the way through.
And so there is still more money to be made, but honestly, yeah. It's kind of like that, you know, if I could talk movies, it's like that quote in Schindler's List. He's like, true power is to not use it. Just saying that about the rest of America. If okay, sorry. Forgive me if I lost you.
Lost me there. But
okay.
Meaning you have all this left to play.
Yeah, all this left to play. And yeah, hey, maybe I won't venture there, and I will continue. I will be a filmmaker. But if need be, I guess I'll maybe fly out there. Or do like super extensive drives. I've been kind of looking into Mexico, but I don't know if I'm going to keep my kneecaps.
Yeah.
What do you know about Mexico?
I don't know anything about Mexico, actually.
Oh, is that right?
First of all, they never had casinos, you know, back when I was playing a lot more and playing in foreign places. So currently, I know there are some, but they're illegal casinos, right?
Is that right? I don't know.
I don't think there are legal casinos in Mexico. I don't know. Well, I'm sure we'll hear from our listeners, but I don't think there are any legal casinos there. So I'd be a little leery. You know, I mean, although I played in illegal casinos in Korea and lived to tell the tale. So.
That's right.
I tried to play in Japan. They were like, no white people allowed.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
They had illegal casinos in Japan.
Oh.
But they wouldn't let Caucasians play, so.
Discrimination.
Yeah.
All right. We're talking to the Phoenix about his blackjack adventures. We're going to take a brief break for some commercials, and we'll be right back.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In August, it's a sizzling summer seat giveaway every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 9 a.m. to 2 a.m. the following day. Approximately 20 random players each hour will be awarded $100. Week 4 of the video poker classes, Wednesday, August 23rd, will be 9-6 Jacks or Better Multi-Strike, which returns 99.79% game, so it's positive 24/7 given the .30 slot club. Multi-Strike is a four-line game where you pay for all four lines at once, and only get to play the upper lines if you get at least your money back on the lower lines. To make up for the fact that you only move up from line to line about half the time, the higher lines pay 2x, 4x, and 8x respectively. Each line has a different strategy because correct strategy depends on both the current payout and the expected payouts from higher lines. One class only, beginning at noon. The class is in the Silverado Lounge, which is immediately in front of Don Vito's restaurant. Everyone at least 21 years of age is welcome. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Bonus Streak Ultimate X. This is a 10 coins per line game. All forms of Ultimate X have you earning multipliers based on your results this hand, which will be played off next hand. The Bonus Streak version, you earn multipliers less often, but more multipliers when you earn them. That is, you need at least three of a kind in games without wildcards, rather than the high pair and two pair that earns your multipliers in regular Ultimate X. This kills the frequency of multipliers about 60% of the time, but you get streams of multipliers rather than individual multipliers. That gives it back to you. The WizardOfOz.com website has a strategy for 8-6 jacks or better Bonus Streak Ultimate X. That's a 98.7% game, if you can find that pay schedule. There are no other strategies published that I'm aware of, so if you're going to tackle this game, you're going to have to work it out yourself.
In the notes you sent us before our show, you said sometimes you pass the count to team members in creative ways. What were you talking about?
Yeah, I have a couple stories. One of which is a success story, but it's kind of funny, is I was at the Venetian, and there's this guy there that's married, and he's like, "Dude, I'm married. This is my wife. This is totally awesome." And the count was 8, and I could see my teammate out of the corner of my eye, and I'm like, "Oh." I'm like, "Hey." And so, you know, we kind of built like a relationship with this newly married couple at the table as I was keeping the count. I'm like, "Hey, bro." As I was coloring up, I was like, "Hey, have a nice 8 years of marriage." And I was taking a bit of a risk there, you know, because the guy was like clearly drunk, and he goes, "8? And I'm like, I was like, "Oh my gosh." I was like, "Yeah, is that cool?" And he goes, "Oh, dude, above and beyond, bro." And then I left the table, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe like that. That's just the only in Vegas."
It sounds like everyone you meet is Spicoli. You know, maybe that's a reference people won't get, but Fast Times at Ridgemont High, it was Sean Penn paid a surfer dude named Spicoli, but they all talk like that. Dude!
I was thinking of the big Lebowski.
Oh, yeah. The dude.
The dude. Okay, and this other story that I have of passing the count was more of like salvaging a situation. I was at this table at MGM, and this dealer's like, "Oh, the women in Colorado. All you have to do is put a bag on their head, and they were great." Huh. And like, you know when it's just you at the table, and it's like the guy's like social hour and like kind of sizes you up and tries to think of how can I extract tip money via subject matter. And so this guy's talking about all this douchey stuff that I just don't want to even talk about. I'm like, "Oh, okay, great, awesome. Yeah, dude," you know. I was a little, like, turned off by this guy. But I'm leaving, and I'm coloring up, and there was kind of an issue at the time. On the team, a guy had, like, been called into a table, the wrong table. And so we had no idea what the count was at that table. You know what I mean? That was, a $2,600 disaster, if I recall. And so there was a problem. We figured this out afterwards, but I was standing up and coloring out, and that – so – BB King alias teammate comes over and thinks I'm calling him in because I'm standing up and coloring out and coloring up, and he thinks I'm calling him in, and I'm like, I'm trying to hint like, "No, dude," you know. So I'm like, "Oh yeah, Denver, you're from Denver, the Colorado area, yeah, Denver where they lost 8 Super Bowls," where it's like trying to hint like negative 8 count, and he hears 8 and he thinks it's positive 8, sits down, buys in, and like, and I start to walk away from the table, and I'm like, "Man, we can't have another disaster like this." And then I was like, "Got it." I come back to the table, and I'm like, "So those women in Colorado, you thought they were ugly, right?" And he's like, "No, they were great." I was like, no. "You said they were ugly. So it was like they had a negative countenance."
Oh, Jesus.
Negative countenance as a, like a means of like, "Dude, you know, BB, get out of here, you know. we got a problem. And then he switches his like huge bets to like $100 bet. And then he wins that bet and gets out of there. And I was like, oh my gosh, it was just like this.
Yeah. I find the direct approach much better. When he approached the table, I would have said, oh, you don't want to play here, man. This table sucks.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, yeah.
I mean, yeah. I think sometimes we can be too clever, you know, when the direct approach works much better.
Well, fortunately, like, I was able to, like, salvage that situation. But, it, admittedly, like, a lot of people are, like, wildly paranoid if they're saying the count. They just feel like everybody knows. You know, like card counters. So there's a tendency to be overly creative as a means of like cover, and then it ends up being disastrous.
Yeah. Also, we had a hand signal that meant leave the table or go away or, you know, don't come near me. You know what I mean? So
is that a middle finger? I've seen that hand signal. People have given that to me.
Which, I mean, it's actually an important signal, right? Also, if there's heat on you and somebody's going to approach you, you don't want them to walk up and, you know, approach you if you know there's heat on you. So you need a signal that says, go away, you know.
Yeah, which for that, it was, well, there's the leave the casino signal was hand on head.
Yeah.
But shame on me.
Well, there's an infinity of... of signals that they can do, and if you have blown one, it's easy to create another one. Winning and losing is certainly part of the AP experience. Do you have any thoughts on the dealing with the emotions that come both ways, winning and losing?
Okay, yeah, like money and emotions. This is something that's sort of that I've what I've a conclusion that I've come to because there's a documentary called. Oh my gosh, I can't. Oh, Happy. Happy. And in the Happy documentary, they cover the hedonic treadmill. And basically, it's like, if you win $1 million, you'll be happy at first, but then you acclimate or get used to what it's like to have $1 million. And then the significance of having $1 million doesn't mean anything. And basically, it's like, once your basic needs are met, no more money is going to buy additional happiness. You know what I mean? People that you know, like Don Johnson and XYZ, people that are multimillionaires, it's like more money doesn't mean more happiness once your needs are met. And like, however, if I'm being totally true and honest with myself, when, you know, nights that I have like a big win, it was like I was happy and like everybody's happy and jokey when you're winning, but when you're losing, you know, that weighs on your emotion, but it's just in the short terms. That stuff tapers off real quick.
How, what's the longest losing streak you've had?
Well, here's what, dude, I've been so lucky. You know how I'm telling you about this. First of all, I was lucky initially. Like I should have, I got backed off of a 6-5 single deck game and they backed me off of that and I won money, but they should have like kicked me anyway. So that was my early lucky phase. And then when I went full time, like
wait, did you not know you were on a 6-5?
No, game, I knew. And I was, it was before my first and second boot camp.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Where, cause what happened at that point in time, I won $9,000 and then I lost 7 of it. But initially my bank, I'd taken out 5. And that's when I was like, whoa, if I lost that $7,000 off the 5 that I initially took out, I'd be out of my money. So I was like, dude, I gotta like go, something's up. Like I'm doing something wrong. And so I went to a second boot camp and figured out everything I was doing wrong. So, but I've been lucky. Like we doubled like 60K in like 6 weeks. And then, so here's, I hate to say this. My worst losing streak is basically breaking even for 2 months.
Wow.
So God, I hope that never happens to me.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I remember getting in my car. It was 2000. We're in 2000. It was, I think, March, April 2016. 2 months of like, win a couple thousand, lose a couple thousand. Win 7,000, lose 7,000. You know, just kept breaking even for like 2 months. And I remember getting into my car and screaming at the top of my lungs out of frustration for not being able to. Because I'm,
and you say you play about 25 hours a week.
Yeah.
So that's like 200 hours of break even. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, that's totally realistic.
Yeah, but I mean, do you think you'll be able to handle a $50,000 downswing?
Oof. Man. This is real talk, Richard.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think is going to happen when
if
hit
I'm
that?
Being fair and honest with myself, that would
that
freak
might
me out.
That might irritate you a bit.
It'd be new territory for me.
I mean, you have to prepare yourself for that because it's going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's.
I mean, I picked that number because I had a friend who basically, he was a solo player. He would hire, guys to spot for him and pay him, you know, $20 an hour or whatever. But he just always won. You know, he would, like you, he might have a period where he broke even for a while. And then he hit a $50,000 downswing, and now he's a real estate agent.
And so he doesn't do it anymore.
No, he doesn't do it anymore.
Oh, wow.
You know.
If your story had ended up now he makes films.
He'd be happy with that. He'd be like, hey, I'm ready.
He'd buy into that bad story.
Yeah.
Okay. All APs periodically get backed off. Do you have any interesting stories about when you were backed off?
I do. I have like the three nasty ones. And what's interesting is I'll just go straight to the nastiest one. It was Saquon in San Diego in Southern California. So here's the deal. I totally thought like, you know how in Vegas it's like people that are backing you off need to treat you with respect because if they do stupid stuff, we can sick Bob Narcissian on them.
If it's not an Indian casino.
Yeah, right. So here's the deal. I thought that was universal, even with Indian casinos. So I'm like, these guys at this Indian casino, dude, this guy, it was almost like I was, I want to say like, you know, when cops like try to beat information just emotionally and psychologically out of people. I feel like this guy was maybe trained in that, but he's like, but you know what you did. You know what I mean? Like trying to like frame things as if
this
like,
was a security guard or a pit boss.
This was, I think it was a pit boss. Dude, man, this guy was rowdy town. And for me, I'm a little rowdy right back. You know what I mean? And I'm like, well, he was like, then why are you leaving? Cause they'd found it was spotter BP and they'd figured us out. The two of us. And I was like, well, would you stay at a casino if someone was treating you the way you're treating me? And I'm like, I'm out of here, man. I haven't done anything wrong. See you later. I'm leaving. And then, so there's a couple tricky things to this situation. Viejas is right next to Saquon, and it was 4th of July. We went over we won like 6K at Saquon, and I don't know. I guess we just felt, it was like, oh, it's sweaty. Let's go over to Viejas. We went over to Viejas, watched the fireworks. And then, and then me and my teammate were like, oh, me and my teammate were like, we only got, we can't make as much EV here. Let's go back to Saquon. We go back to Saquon. And then the pit boss, I think, tells the tribal police, like, hey, these guys have already been here. And then the tribal police was like, hey, in his mind, he's thinking like, we've already been trespassed or backed off. And so like, I'm going to the parking garage after our first talk with them, and then he handcuffs me, and I'm handcuffed for like 30 minutes, and they got my ID, they cashed out my chips, and then they let me go. But that was like my worst experience, is being handcuffed for 30 minutes.
Did you try to pursue it with, I mean, did you talk to any lawyers about it or no?
Well, here's the deal. We get in the car and my teammate, and I'm like, dude, I think that's a lawsuit. And then we turn on your guys' podcast, and conveniently, it's the, I don't know if you remember this podcast, but it's a podcast with Bob Narcissian where he's like, yeah, dude, we just blasted this casino in like out in the middle of nowhere, northern Vegas somewhere, where I guess these two guys were doing a whole card and then they got kicked out of their hotel room.
Oh, yeah. Mesquite.
Mesquite.
Yeah.
Okay. And so like, and me and my teammate are like, dude, this could be $200,000. And then you guys transition into, yeah, but man, if you're at an Indian casino, you're screwed. and then we're like, oh, and that basically just answered our question right there. And then that was like my school of Indian hard knocks.
Yeah.
That you gotta be on, you gotta mind your P's and Q's on sovereign soil. And then we still got some time?
Sure.
Okay. So I have two other nasty, back offs. One at Hooters. here in Vegas?
Yeah.
I was here at Hooters just blasting away on the
getting
scene.
Backed off at a restaurant? Yeah. You ate too many nachos?
I mean, Hooters still has like $3 tables, right? So,
and they also still have like a 3-2 single deck.
Wow.
And that's what I was like jumping on. And I kind of...
Why would they watch that closely?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So I think I got a back off once and then I'm coming back. And they were totally polite that time, but I was like a repeat offender. So I was coming back a second time, you know, with a teammate. They go to back me off. And then the guy, the pit boss at the time, when I went backs me off. And then I'm like, this doesn't help, but this is what I did that was stupid. I was like, dude, that's not who I am. He refers to me by my real name. I'm like, that's not who I am. Dude, let me go out to my car and get my ID and show you who I really am. And, you know, you going to comp me some? And the guy's like totally apologetic. And I'm like, yeah, you going to comp me some food? And basically I like cash out my chips and I I use the restroom and I cash out my chips. And sort of the agreement between me and the pit boss is that my plan was is like, I'm just going to get out of here now. They're onto me. They know what's up. And like, I had no plan of returning. But then the pit boss is totally apologetic. But then I see him get back on the phone. And then the security guard is going to walk with me out to my car to get the ID. And then I'm like, I'd never had that happen before. And I'm like, and then basically I start lying my butt off like, oh, wait a minute. That's right. I didn't drive here. I rode that monorail here. That's where I'm going. And then the security guard's like, well, hey, I kind of have to take a picture of you now. And I'm like putting my hand up to the camera. And I walk away, just make sure I walk off the property. And then I think the security guard yelled some sort of insulting comment at the time. But I've just never gone back to Hooters and just felt really violated in that moment. And then... at Thunder Valley,
it's in Auburn, California. It's a station casino.
No. This one's around Sacramento. It may be a station.
Yeah. Thunder Valley. That is owned by stations.
Really?
Right? At least it used to be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I've heard that.
Not Thunder Mountain. Thunder Valley.
Thunder Valley.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's in California. Yeah. All right. Well, those, I remember getting backed off there, and the guy's like, do you have any ID, sir? And I'm like, no. But I just remember the security guard, I was repeatedly saying, like, have a nice day! Like, really loud, you know, have a nice day! And the security guard was, like, bending my ear, like, blah, 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 don't come back here! Blah, 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 blah. And then I'm at the cage, and we're kind of, like, huffy with each other. And then the cage lady, like, kind of says to the security guard, is it okay if I cash him out? And the guy says, yes. But the security guard has the expectation that she has to ask for ID. And then she doesn't. She just cashes me out, gives me the cash. And then the security guard says to the cage lady, she's like, "Hey, don't you have to ask for his ID?" And she's like, "Nope." and then the security guard was like, "If you come back here, I'm gonna arrest your ass." Is what he said to me. Like that's word for word, and that's you know the tonality as well. And I'm a little chippy. When it comes to,
I was going to say, you don't know when to just walk away.
I wish, I'm trying, like, because I know it doesn't help the community if I'm a jerk. And honestly,
it doesn't help you either, though.
I know.
More importantly.
Yeah, because they'll remember me. I'm trying, that's the hardest part of the job, obviously, because I haven't had the $50,000 negative swing yet. But, I'm trying to get better at the back offs, you know, That's the hardest part of the job for me.
Mm. For what?
So you don't mind the staying in the Motel 6 alone at night every night on the road and eating at Denny's?
Oh my gosh! I've gotten fatter and it does wear on you.
Yeah,
to the point where it's like that also lends to you having a short fuse, you know, because the combination of everything like emotional money swings plus like. Bad sustenance, and then ladies. Forgive me. I don't want to sound racist, but like usually Mexican, like ladies that come to the cleaning door, and like even though you have like a do not disturb sign, they're always like housekeeping. Which apparently, I like a good trick for that is to put like a note on your door that says, "I have a late checkout," and then they'll leave you alone. Yeah. I got that as this boot camp. I got that as a tip from a friend of mine. Like that, you know, that's really effective.
How did you go from how did you go from playing and going through the boot camp to teaching at the boot camp?
You know, I kind of like, because I initially, there was a JC note, basically he's like really, really good friends with Colin. And, but I just heard about the boot camp through what I've said earlier and then trained. And then I guess because I was a success story, sort of the barometer, my understanding of the barometer of like, if someone knows what they're doing is if they can take $100,000 off of casinos. And like, I've done that a few times over. And so it's like, that's how you know that you know what you're doing. And so I think, and also it's good to have active people because it's current information. Because
sure,
Colin's team is a little older, you know what I mean? It's good because like the landscape kind of changes. Now it seems like more poorer quality of games, but more stores.
Yeah.
And so it's like a trade-off in that regard. And that seems to be like the sort of the current landscape. Because admittedly, there was a time period I was like I saw his documentary and I always saw guys that were making like 30K biggest wins and stuff. And I was like I think the most I'd ever done even, I didn't see figures like that passed until my first weekend on that team. And we'd cleared 35 grand in 5 days. I was like, it's finally real. Cause there was a bit of a disconnect. I was like, maybe this isn't going to happen. Like maybe I'm not going to be able to clear
make any money.
Make any money at this. And it was kind of just, that's why I was like, let's try the team. Cause I was like, well, the documentary was about a team. So teams are where it's at. And then I just learned through that experience, like what reality is through team experiences. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
I apologize.
Yeah. Do you, alter your unit size or your maximum bet based on the particular casino?
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, I kind of acquiesce to a 2% risk of ruin. Like, I try to just don't go over 2%. And then oftentimes, it's really nice to, a lot of places you go to, it's like their table, there's just, you just, they're two hands of their table max, you're basically what it means is like, you're going to make less money, but you're not going to hit your risk of ruin at all.
Right, right, right.
You know what I mean? It's less EV.
Sometimes it's not the table max. Sometimes it's just, this casino is not going to take it if I try to bet two hands of 1,000.
Yes, that's correct.
You know what I mean? So
yeah, I think the most I've ever bet is two hands of 600.
Yeah. But yeah, but you'll look at a casino and go, you know what? I think this casino, I shouldn't bet more than two hands of 3 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know what? I highly stay away from single and double deck at this point. I try to just do multi-deck. Because you can Wong in, and then like, you can also stick and move, like play a hot shoe over here, play another hot shoe. If you jump between pit and pit, hopefully it makes it tougher for surveillance to kind of get after
and
you.
And when you're on the road, will you just camp out in a place till they throw you out, or do you hit and run and go to the next place down the road?
If I feel like the place is just going to let it rip, I'll let it rip. I love those places. But I feel like you just never know. And what's weird is talking with other card counters, because it's a bit of a community with these boot camps, especially with all the trainers that are active. It's like everybody has different stories. They're like, "What? You got like a weekend at such and such place? I got 10 minutes."
Right.
You know what I mean? And then you'll talk about another place, and then you got the vice versa. You know what I mean? And so it's just like basically what that boils down to is this: like, just go and see what your experience is. Because there's a little bit of like, hey, I look like Jack Black, and people really like Jack Black. You know what I mean? And so, like, or just who knows what was in the water, or somebody was getting fired. There was a time out here at Orleans, like, there was a guy that was like 5 security guards. He was being totally unruly, and he was just out of his mind as far as I was concerned. And like 5 security guards were there, and it's just like, gonna capitalize on this opportunity, because like it was me and another teammate at the time, and then like I talked to the other teammate afterwards, and I guess the pit boss was like, yeah, I've talked to surveillance about these guys like numerous times. They don't care. Just shut up. You know, because they're basically like primary focus is this guy for like 2 hours trying to get this unruly dude out of there.
Wow, they couldn't get him out?
Well, he was unruly, and oh, you know what it was? He was crippled. So there's a little bit of like, you gotta treat the guy in the wheelchair. You know what I mean? I think that's what added. And then so for us, it's like, we know that they know that we know that they know. 2 hours, and then once you saw him like finally kind of getting ushered out, we ushered ourselves out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's like, if they let it rip, you capitalize, and you never know what the, like, it's just, you never know when someone's going to have a wild hair up their ass.
Before we leave, while I actually happened to look up Thunder Valley Casino Resort. It's not in Auburn. It's in Lincoln. But it's owned by the United Auburn's Indian Community. It was run by Stations until 2010, which is before the Phoenix started doing this. So it is not run by Stations anymore. So that makes a lot of what each of the three of us said more into context.
There it is. It's like everybody was right, but also wrong.
That's it. Thank you, Phoenix. This was enjoyable. This was interesting. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.